From the dawn of the morning to close of day, in example, in deeds, and in all you say. Lay your gifts at his feet, ever strive to keep sweet. Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you. Good to see everyone here tonight. We appreciate so very, very much your being here. If you're visitors, we thank you for coming. Hope you'll come back again. And to the members, we're really glad to see each of you. And I want to thank again, first the elders for inviting me to come. Appreciate that confidence that you have in me to ask me to come. Appreciate that. And appreciate the congregation here has been so hospitable to my wife and I. Lots of meals, lots of homes, and out to eat and so forth, places. And thank you very much. And you've been so hospitable. It's really, we really do feel like we've come home. And it's good to be home and to see family and to be part again of the work and worship here. Well, we're going to conclude our study of Let the Beauty of Jesus Be Seen in Us tonight. And I'm going to do something a little bit different. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. I'm going to have all the passages on the board. And I'm going to go through a lot of passages. And I'll probably go too quick, and I'll apologize from the get-go. But any and all of the PowerPoint presentations are on the computer back there in the back. Brother Matt, one of those guys back there, can get you a copy of it if you need a hard copy or electronic copy of what we've talked about. But tonight, there's a lot of passages. And the way I want to begin by reading Acts 10, verse 38. You know of Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit and with power, and how he went about doing good. Doing good. In Ephesians 2 and verse 10, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. That passage would illustrate that even before the foundations of the earth, God intended us to be busy, working. We're going to talk about tonight, created for good works. There might be even a second title that I would say to you. Are you doing good? Now, most of the time when we ask that question, are you doing good? People say, yeah, I'm doing good. I'm fine. We're answering in regards to, probably asking and answering in regards to our physical health. But tonight I'm asking the question in regards to your spiritual service. Are you doing good? So, put your seat in an upright position, buckle your seatbelt. We're going to blast off, and we're going to look at a lot of passages. Well, first of all, in Luke 12 and verse 48, everyone who has been given much shall much be required. Now, if you stop and think about that for a moment, maybe you don't think of yourself in the category of being rich. But you are. As far as the vast majority of this planet, you are very wealthy. And what we have in this country, we are extremely blessed. I know lots of things going on, crazy, the economy and our world politically and the world just socially and morally and just, there's a lot of stuff going on. But it's still a great country in many respects. And we're greatly blessed. If you've ever been out of the country, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So this passage talks about how much you give is based upon how much you've been given. And I'm just going to say, all of us have been given a lot. But are you doing good? We were created for good works. In Luke 10 and verse 33, Jesus tells a parable of what we refer to as the Good Samaritan. And a certain Samaritan saw him, that is the fellow that had been robbed and beaten, left half dead. The Samaritan felt compassion. He took care of him. Jesus concluded that parable with, you need to go and do the same. Now, just so we're clear, don't rob somebody and leave them half dead. That's not what he was emphasizing. He was emphasizing the idea of doing good unto those who need help. So really, to be what we need to be for the beauty of Jesus to be seen in us, we must be willing to go and do, to go and serve. That is essential to be a disciple. Indeed, there is not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. How many times have there been that there was an opportunity staring you right in the face and you didn't do anything? Later you said, I should have done something. I had an opportunity. And so we spend our time in regret by woulda, coulda, shoulda. So what this lesson is really intended to do, I don't think I'll be teaching you anything you don't know, but to motivate you to do what you know is right to do. Because to him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, to him it is sin. And do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is pleased. Did you know doing good involves sacrifice? It involves sacrifice in the sense that it may cost you time. Why don't we do good sometimes? Well, we don't have time. Well, we might have to sacrifice some time. Well, where do you get the time? Well, everybody's got the same amount, 24/7. Well, you got to give up something. A preacher friend of mine said one time to a younger preacher, the younger preacher was whining that he didn't have enough time to do this and didn't have enough time to do that as a preacher. The old preacher just said, well, get up earlier. Wow, I hadn't thought of that. Get up earlier. Well, maybe you got to get up earlier. Maybe it's not just time. Maybe it actually costs you money. You know, to serve can cost you money. If you're providing a service, you're providing something for someone, whatever they might need, it costs you money. So the passage says, and do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is pleased. So you might just ask yourself this, you know, a question, self-examination. Have I ever, really, as a disciple, done anything that cost me something? Because most usually, we're willing to do something that doesn't cost us anything. So have you ever had to pay to serve? Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is of God. The one who does evil has not seen God. Notice the contrast. The contrast is those that do good, they're of God. Those who do evil have not seen God. I think that idea of, does this have a pointer? Probably doesn't, does it? No, okay. Sorry? Try it. Oh, what was that? Ah, that is cool. Can I have this? That is cool. Okay, see this right here? It says, has not seen God. Now, the Bible teaches that no one has seen God. No one can see God and live. So seeing there is not the idea of putting your eyes on. It's the idea of experiencing. It's the idea of ultimately, we would say, a relationship with. So those that do evil do not have a relationship with God. Another way of saying that would be, we don't have fellowship with God. So if you do good, you have fellowship with God. Does that make sense? So doing good is all about having a relationship with God. Now this doesn't work. Matt, help me. I killed it. Thank you. And let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we shall reap if we do not grow weary. This idea here of the idea of not lose heart is really kind of defined for us in the context. Do not grow weary. Now, what does that mean? Let us not lose heart, do not grow weary, doing good. Have you ever helped someone and it didn't really help them? And then you had to help them again? And then you think that really didn't help, so you help them again. And, okay, we'll just say it this way. They're high maintenance. They demand a lot of maintenance, high maintenance. And you keep helping and you keep helping and keep helping and keep helping, but it's just like, I'm going to stop doing this because it's not doing any good. This passage is talking about that doing good, you shouldn't lose heart, you should not grow weary, because then he goes on and says, for in due time we shall reap. Now that might have to do with, well, if you keep helping someone at some point in time, God will give the increase. That might be what it means. But it also, I think, has to do with that whether or not you're doing good, does that person or persons any good at all, you are really going to reap a benefit. Not necessarily from what they do or their change, but it's going to be from God. God does reward us for doing good. So you shouldn't grow weary. You shouldn't lose heart because you're doing good. You're making sacrifices. It's costing you time. It's costing you money because you're going to get paid back. God is going to reward you. So don't get upset about it. And don't stop doing good. As long as you have life in your breath, as long as you're living, I'll get it right in a minute here, got my words crossed. As long as you're living, you have the means, you have the opportunity, you have the responsibility, and God will reward you for that. It's a powerful passage. Now, he says, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not grow weary. I think that word if is a big word. I'm not the first that's ever said that. You've heard that before. But I think if you look at what this modifies, you're not going to reap in due season, that is from God, if you grow weary. So if you gripe, complain, fuss, because you're doing good, it's costing you time and it's costing you money, and you analyze and say, this is not doing any good, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'll just keep doing it anyway. If you've got the wrong disposition about your service, did you remember in 1 Corinthians 13 it says something similar to that? What about if you give all your possessions, if you give your body to be burned, and yet you don't have love, what does it profit you? Nothing. So here's an important point. God cares why you do it. And if you're going to do it and gripe and complain, then just quit. If you're not going to do it out of love, then just quit. So you got to get your attitude right. Verse 10 says, so then while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, and especially those of the household of faith. We have opportunity. Talked about that earlier, but there are opportunities that are all around us. good friend of mine, many of you would know the name David Tant. He lived in the Atlanta area for many, many, many years. I think he lives now in Nashville area. And that guy was tremendous at converting people. He would convert people like the teller of the drive-thru of the bank. And he would make conversation with anybody, anyone. And he saw every time he was with anyone an opportunity. I think many of us always just kind of looking for the perfect situation. And there's never a perfect situation. You just got to pray about recognizing, doing what needs to be done. So we do have opportunities. But we need to be able to do good to all men. Everyone. Good men, bad men. Pretty men, ugly men. Pretty ugly men. We need to do good to all. But then he says, especially those of the household of faith. So, I'm not sure that as disciples, we do a real good job of just taking care of us. We have become a very self-centered people, caring mainly about ourselves. We don't want to get in anybody else's business. We don't want to cause any problems. And even people, when we see that they do need, we're fearful of doing anything or saying anything. And that's what discipleship is not about that. It's about doing something. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. There are passages after passages that talk about this idea of us storing up treasures in heaven. And I want to suggest to you that many of those passages, if not all of those passages, have to do with what you do. Now, we have, some of the religious world have the idea that we're saved by grace and not of works. They emphasize that. All these passages I'm reading you is emphasizing you are saved by what you do. It's not that you earn it. That is by grace. But God expects you to work. You are created for works, to do something. This passage says you need to be rich in good works. So how rich are you in good works? What, did you do something for somebody one time a long time ago? Are you constantly doing good? Let him who means to love life and to see good days refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile, and let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Now, let's see if this works again. That was so cool. Ah, look at that. And let him turn away from evil and do good. Evil, the absence of good. Good, the absence of evil. If you want to avoid evil, do good. You need to be doing stuff. Actively doing something. Helping someone. That's what discipleship is. That's how the beauty of Jesus is seen in you by others. Doing good. It's active. Helping others physically. Whoever has this world's goods and behold his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? It's a great question. Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. When I was here, Todd was here. Todd Chandler was here too. Todd went down to Colombia, I think, a few times. I went to Honduras a few times. And both of us were, that was a life-changing experience. It really was. And many of you have been other places like that too. But I must say to you, it hasn't been since I've been to Africa that it has really changed me. I thought there was poverty in the world and third world countries in Central America and so forth. You certainly see tremendous poverty. But I had never seen poverty until I went to Africa. When you read that passage, if you've never, ever, ever, ever really boots on the ground experienced seeing Christians without food, you'll read that passage a little bit differently. So when I got back, I've been on a mission begging, pleading every church that would have me do a report about Africa. Individuals just try to steal their pocketbook. I mean, do what I can. Because there are many brethren that just don't have food to eat. And we do. And we know it. The question is, are we doing anything? Personally, what are you doing? I've heard Christians say, well, you know, if I just knew of someone that I could really help and that it would, you know, get to them and do some good, I would do that. And I believe that. And for years, I don't remember back in the day when I was here and served as one of the elders here with David and Johnny and others. Does this sound the least bit familiar, guys, that we would set a benevolence budget, maybe $1,000 or $1,500? Does that sound about right? Maybe $2,000? And rarely would we ever spend that? Does that sound about right? And it's just that there wasn't anybody for us to help. I mean, it wasn't that we were stingy or wouldn't help. It's just, who is there to help? I'm not saying this to impress anybody, not to brag about anything. But the congregation where I preach at now, Anderson, we're 180 to 200 people. A lot of farmers. Got some that's got good jobs. Last year, we sent $148,000 to Africa. That was mind-boggling. I don't care who you are. $148,000 is a lot of money. And there are still Christians who need help. Now, I hope you're sitting there thinking, man, I want to do that. I want to help. Then you should. It's not just Zimbabwe. There's all kinds of countries in Africa. In other parts of the world. We need to wake up and get outside of ourselves. And all the wealth and all that we have, what are we going to do with it when others are in need? What does the text say? How does the love of God abide in us? When you know. This is pure, undefiled religion in the sight of God and Father, to visit orphans, widows, in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. first congregation I preached at, our first worship services on worship service on Sunday morning in Zimbabwe, Southside Mutare. There were 600 people there that day. 600 people. 200 of them were orphans of Christians because their parents had died because of lack of food. Breaks your heart. You can't imagine that. And I have not counted the numbers. But my guess is there are more Christians in Africa than all of the United States. There are more Christians in Central America and South America than the United States. But who's got all the money? And what are we doing with it? I know this church here helps tremendously preachers and other needs, and that's commendable. I'm asking, what are you doing personally? Because it's easy to say, well, I give on Sunday and we're helping, so I... No, we're talking about individual responsibility here. What are you doing personally? Just so you know, there are orphans that other Christians are taking into their homes, and most Christians over there will have their own families, and that might be anywhere from 6 to 8. They're also taking care of their parents and even some siblings. And most all of them have 2 or 3 orphans in their home too. That's a lot of mouths to feed. With unemployment rate is over 90%. Do you want to help an orphan? There's plenty to help. You can send an orphan to school for $150 a year. Now, you see commercials all the time about stuff like that. I'm talking about real. This is real. There are widows, beautiful ladies. They wear these bright colored clothes, dresses, hats. They're just beautiful people. If there are widows, faithful Christian ladies, they may walk 3 to 5K, come to church. Don't have any money to buy blood pressure medicine. Now, why am I bringing all this up? I don't get a thing out of that. I'm not getting a percentage or whatever. I'm just saying, we're talking about doing good, and the Bible talks explicitly about that responsibility to us as individuals, and yet time and time again I hear Christians say, well, if I just knew of somebody, I'm telling you, there are people that need help. What you going to do? Matthew 10 and verse 42, and whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. One thing I found out when I got over there, neither do they, because of drought and because of famine in that particular area where I go and visit, the last 7, 8, 10 years or so, just is horrible. They don't even have good water to drink. Thankfully, we can buy bottled water and we can have something to drink while we're there. You think about that. You might just be able to help somebody have a drink of water. And the Lord says, you'll not lose your reward if you do that. That's real. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. And I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. And I was in prison and you came to me. Now, not that praying is not important. Don't anybody leave here and say, well, Salih said that you don't have to pray for anybody. No, you do need to pray for people. But this passage, the day of judgment, seeing Jesus didn't mention anything about praying for someone. Again, one more time, make sure nobody misunderstands, misquotes me. Somebody's in a difficult situation, and you say to them, I'll be praying for you. What should you do? You should pray for them. That's what you need to do. But many cases, prayer isn't all we should do. You actually need to do something. So again, the question, have you ever done anything? Are you rich in that? Jesus is going to ask us on the day of judgment. There's an example. Helping people spiritually is a great thing that we can do. Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. The idea of restore, it's used in a couple of senses in the original language. It's the idea of medicinally, a broken bone. You mend it, you set it. It's also used by fishermen when they mend their nets. So that word was pretty common. So here's the deal. You who are spiritual, who are those people? The people that are faithful, those that are calling themselves disciples. They're letting the beauty of Jesus be seen in them. So what do? They restore someone. Someone's broken a bone. Somebody's got a hole in their net. What do? You restore it with the spirit of gentleness. You know that's giving too? Giving is not, and doing good works is just not about money. But it's just about the fact that you care enough about someone who is lost, who is struggling, who is strained, who has fallen, and you care enough to restore them. And we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all men. Quick story. Many years ago, one of the deacons where I was preaching in Huntsville, Alabama, he wanted me to run a 10K. I didn't know how far 10K was at that time, so I had to figure out how far it was. And he said, I want you to run 10K. It was a race and everything, cotton roll run. And I said, sure, I'll run that. So I exercised and ate a lot of chicken wings and cheese fries, and then I'd run some more, and then I'd eat hamburgers and stuff. I didn't take it very seriously. And so we got there for the race, and pow, we all took off. And the first half, first 5K, was uphill. It was uphill. And we went uphill. I thought I was going to die. I was going to have a heart attack. Got up there to the top of that hill. I thought, well, I'm done. This guy, that he was a really, really, really great runner. And he came back, and he found me. So I pass out. And he said, I'll help you. So we started going downhill the last half. And we were flying down this hill. And we were going a lot faster than I could go. And I told him so. I said, I can't run this fast. I said, I'm going to die. And he looked at me and he says, give me your hat. I said, what? He said, give me your hat. So I'm running down this hill as fast as I can go, and my heart is just like this. So I take off my hat and I hand it to him. I thought, what is the deal? And, well, I could feel the breeze a little bit, and it kind of revived me a little bit, you know, not having that hat on. And he looked at me for a little bit, make sure I wasn't going to die, I guess. And then after a few minutes, he handed me my hat back, and I put it on my head, and I felt pretty good, and he took off. You know what? He probably saved me, you know, by holding my hat. Did you know how many people are running the race of being a Christian, and they're about to die? You could be there to hold their hat. That seems like such a simple, silly little thing. But I'm convinced that I was able to finish that race because of a very simple little thing. You know what? He had run so many races, he knew how important it was to take your hat off for a few moments, because that hat is holding in so much heat and kind of cool you off and get a breeze. Put it back on and go. Could you do that for someone spiritually? You should. And the things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust the faithful men who will be able to teach others also. I will forever be thankful to Lloyd Spinks, Joe Durrett, elders of this church way back in the 70s, who encouraged me, encouraged that man and that man right there to teach. Are you encouraging anybody to teach? Encourage them. Everyone who has been given much shall much be required. Look what you have. Look what you're blessed with. What are you doing with it? Go and do the same. Show mercy. Show compassion. Are you doing good? Well, that's what I come to tell you. That's it. Any questions? Any comments? Anything at all? You got 30 seconds. Any comments at all? Yes, sir. Yes, Wes. There's lots of different ways you can do that. Wes is asking about if you wanted to help with Zimbabwe. You can give it to me. I can give you the names of other guys, faithful men, who make sure resources get to where they're supposed to go. Let me just tell you a little bit about Facebook. Everybody hates Facebook and everybody looks at Facebook. There are some men in Zimbabwe that are just faithful men that you can become friends with on Facebook, and through Messenger, they will send you all kinds of reports. For instance, if you send one of these brothers, these faithful brother, money over there, and you say, I want to send a help this for an orphan or for a widow or whatever, they will send you copies of the receipt or pictures of the receipt, the dates on it and all this stuff. And they will show you who they helped. So it's a really good, open, visual way to see what your money's doing. So whether you give it to me, you give it to some other guys I can tell you about, you can get it there. Okay? Yes, sir?
Do you have a foundation?
I don't have a foundation. I just have a checking account. And I've got a debit card to it, and I use Zoom, I use Western Union, and if you gave me $100, I'd just send it over by Zoom to a faithful brother, and what you say you want it to be used for, I tell him what it to be used for, and then he does it, and he sends the pictures. It's easy as that. Sorry? I'll do that. There's Trimore, there's Taka, there's Reason, there's a bunch of guys like that are good men. Good, faithful men. Anybody else? Was that the bell? That's it. Okay. Thank y'all.